Hello and welcome to Elephate in the Room. I am Derek Caraview, your host, and this is Elephate's weekly podcast. In the room this week is Jono Alderson, who is a digital strategist, a marketing technologist, and a full-stack developer. He works for Yoast, and he also describes himself as a futurologist and a bit of a keynote speaker. We had a nice little conversation. We get to find out one of the ways that apparently you can get a job in this industry is to insult your boss on stage for years, or your future boss anyway. In our opening round, we find out if he had to wear a t-shirt with the same word on it every day for a year, which word he would choose. We also get into the would he rather always have to speak in rhyme or to dance everywhere that he went. And then finally, which is he more prepared for, the zombie apocalypse or the robot uprising? So please find yourself something to drink, somewhere nice to be, sit back, relax, and enjoy Elephate in the Room with me, Derek, and Jono.
So before we kick things off, could you explain to our audience who you are and what you do?
Sure. So that's a complex question. I'm, I guess, at heart, a technical SEO and a bit of a web developer, but increasingly a consultant and strategist and amateur dabbling futurologist. So I'm lucky enough to be in a position where my day job is essentially working with the guys at Yoast, who everyone will know from our WordPress plugin, to work out what's next, essentially, and to dabble with special projects and integrations and product roadmap and just making sure we are on the cutting edge of tech SEO and understanding what Google's up to, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I bounce around a lot. I speak at a lot of conferences and I spend a lot of time thinking about what it all means and where it's all going. Lots of fun.
That does sound like lots of fun. Okay, so let's go ahead and get started here. First question, you have to wear a t-shirt with the same word on it every day for a year. Which word do you choose?
Oh, that's challenging. I think rah, like a dinosaur, screeching into the night. I like to convey a bit of fear into the people I'm speaking to. And I certainly get lots of feedback from my talks and things that there's a potentially optimizing on the side of being slightly too enthusiastic when I'm telling people about what they should do and what they should be thinking. So something that conveys that would be nice.
What is the oddest holiday that you actually celebrate?
So do you know about my side hobby? Have you done the research?
Yeah.
So I got asked that by somebody recently who didn't understand that I was behind Days of the Year, which was amusing. So I reckon the weirdest one I celebrate, I think it has to be Umbrella Cover Day, which is not sexy or exciting in any way, but it's such a cute little story. There's a crazy old woman who lives somewhere on the far west coast of the US who has the Guinness World Record for the world's largest collection of umbrella covers, like the plastic sheath that it comes in when you buy it and you throw it away.
Sure, yeah.
And she collects them all because everyone has a story and she's got a theme tune and a museum. She travels the world. She's absolutely insane and it's just lovely. So every year I go out and buy an umbrella and ship her the thing. And I've now got a couple of covers in her museum, which is really, really nice.
That does seem like that world record could be like 7, though.
Yeah, I think it was 350-ish, which even then isn't that much. Like a cheap umbrella is what, a couple of dollars? So yeah. If I was particularly mean, I could take it off her.
How did you get involved in that project?
Oh God, years and years ago, it was a silly idea. So the honest truth is it got to about Christmas Eve and I realized I'd forgotten to buy my mother a Christmas present. So I panicked. And the only place that was open by this time was the awful little corner shop, around the corner. It's the only place that's still open. And all they've got is calendars and they're really bad. They're like, 12 cats of 2016 or whatever it is. Awful. So I bought one of those and hummed and hawed and realized that I was peripherally aware of a couple of weird holidays like Talk Like a Pirate Day. So I went and scribbled a couple of those in and realized I was onto something and thought, wouldn't it be funny if I filled this just with odd holidays? So I did that, got away with it, was a reasonable gift, and then did some more research into it. And it turns out that there are loads of these holidays. They are scattered all over the web, and there's not really many places that bring them all together. So realized we were onto something and spent about 10 years now curating, collecting, reviewing them, and building out a big database of them all. So it's been a bit of a weird experience.
Yeah,
it's been
fun. Like that would be. What has been the just plain old oddest one that you have found, or one of the ones that comes to mind first when people ask you about this?
One of the most successful ones, which still baffles me, that gets an order of magnitude more attention, more likes, more followers, more views, is Hogger Plumber Day. Like, go and embrace the guy who fixes the pipes. It's such an odd minority thing. And I can't imagine who it is celebrating that, but the internet goes crazy for it. It's mad.
And maybe it's all the Polish plumbers in the UK.
just wanting a bit of love. Could be.
Guys over there. All right. Are zebras black with white stripes or white with black stripes?
I'm pretty sure that they're black with white stripes, if I recall. We did have a zebra day. I can find out. Because they're the same as polar bears, aren't they? Well, not quite the same, but...
Close, I think. Yeah. All right. What was the first concert you ever went to?
Oh, the first concert. I think it was the Straubs, who are a early 70s kind of prog rock band who are still doing the rounds up until fairly recently. Doing kind of almost folk rock stuff in a tiny little town hall somewhere in Halifax, I think. That was phenomenally loud, and it was the day before my GCSE French test, which was all about carefully listening to what the instructor was saying and having a conversation. And of course, I turned up and could barely hear, so scraped through with a C grade, which is just enough to not fail. But that was a lesson learned.
All right. And what made why that particular band? What was it about that you wanted to go see them first?
No, I think my parents dragged me along to it. I was quite young at the time, and they were big fans, and it was one of the bands I'd grown up with, so they were just the right time and right place for them to be around the corner.
What do dolphins eat?
What do dolphins eat? I can only presume other dolphins. I have no idea. This was... I should have done my homework. Wasn't there a Will Critchlow thing about this recently with his children searching? I definitely should have pretended I'd read that and got the answers.
I got that off your Twitter.
Oh, that's going to bug me now. Damn it. Yeah.
Now they know you didn't really read it, even though you shared it.
No. Yeah. That's going to show me up.
So what are you currently reading? I see that you're a big book lover. So what you reading these days?
I'm struggling. I challenged myself and I regret it. There's an epic fantasy series called The Book of the Malazan, and it's about 12 books, and it's well regarded as being the biggest, most challenging fantasy super epic thing there is. It's like 10 times Tolkien and beyond. It's really, really good, and I've really enjoyed slogging through it. Finally got to the end and thought, wow, nobody else has ever achieved this. This is great. Really rewarding, except it turns out now that there are tons of prequels and side books, so I'm attempting to get through them, and it is hard work. I think I might have to give up soon, which is something I never ever do with books, but this may be a first.
Yeah, that's the one thing when you get into those books that are set in a universe, and then you think you got a straight line, but then suddenly there's a lot of different stuff going on.
Oh yeah, and it just keeps going.
Okay, and in an alternate timeline, what would you be doing?
Ooh, an alternate timeline or a past timeline?
Either one. So if you weren't doing what you're doing, what would you be doing?
So I think I've thought about this a lot. I think I would love to be in town planning and city design, because it's almost exactly the same as SEO and technical SEO and web architecture. It's like that. I've got lots of moving parts, and I need to plan and architect it all and work out how it all fits together. And then, of course, it inevitably goes wrong because things break and you can't account for what tomorrow looks like. And it's a giant game of trying to stop everything fall apart constantly. So that'd be quite interesting.
I think that would be being able to just kind of dive in from the beginning. It's obviously having to deal with what's already there, what exists, certain infrastructure, certain things that really can't be changed. But it really does seem like it would be fun to...
Yeah, exactly. I think that's pretty similar to how how most web stuff works. You're stuck with constraints and people and processes and tech and architecture and stuff. So same kind of challenges.
All right. So you recently started working for Yoast, as you mentioned in the introduction. I think that's just the last couple of months, correct?
Yeah.
Before you were at Distilled. So how'd you get the new gig?
So I suggest people don't try this at home, but I spent years insulting Yoast the person. So my first big conference was Distilled Searchlove, maybe 2013, 2014 now. And I did a big talk about technical SEO, and here's 100 tips and tricks and hacks and things to level up and go faster and be better. And one of the key points was that people shouldn't use software that kind of shortcuts and gets them to 80%, and Yoast SEO in particular, because it makes people lazy and it stops them thinking about getting to 100%. And it's created a world where everybody hits okay, but nobody is motivated or aware that they could be better. So I grumbled about that quite publicly for a long time. And then was lucky enough to spend some time at an event in person with Yoast and a few other smart people, and gradually changed my thinking and came to the realization that the world is a better place for having that kind of stuff in it. And even if everybody just gets to 8 out of 10, that's better than a world where nobody's at 8 out of 10. So we came to a realization. It became quite competitive. So for a while, my motivation for leveling up my SEO and getting better known in the WordPress world even, and other stuff, was very much about contending with Yoast and being the smarter person. And we had a kind of rivalry for a little while. And then we had a brief chat over Christmas where he essentially said, "Why aren't you working for me yet?" And then by March I was, so it all just fell into place.
Okay, so yeah, so not exactly the typical way to get into a company, but does he ever find video of you saying bad things about him and force you to watch it again at work
in front of your colleagues? So the video is quite well buried, thankfully, but there are a couple of slides that show up occasionally, and there are a few people I called out specifically in that talk saying, "Here are some people who I've heard and have quoted saying all I do is install Yoast and then don't bother with anything else." So they troll me quite frequently whenever I bump into them. So I will never live that down.
Okay. Did you have to buy donuts a lot when you first started working there?
Oh yeah.
Smooth things over.
Yeah.
So now, what exactly do you do at Yoast? What's your primary responsibility there?
So it's deliberately quite ambiguous. I guess there's two parts of it. One is I speak at a lot of conferences and events about all sorts of stuff, from tech SEO to future of marketing, etc., which for the most part is to put Yoast branding out there in the real world, to validate Yoast as a brand and an ideology in the SEO world, because historically there's been it's had an odd reputation where there's been, because we're so prolific on so many sites across the internet, a lot of people, what am I trying to say? Essentially, it had a bit of a poor reputation because it was so widely used and so well known. And in the same way that WordPress has a poor reputation because there's a low barrier to entry, so people do bad stuff with it, it became a bit associated with that. So I'm trying to be the face of more grown-up SEO, and Yoast is part of that. And then day to day, when I'm not on the stage and traveling around, I am dabbling with special projects. So looking at what our roadmap looks like, tweaking code ideas and examples, building odds and ends, working on our website, and playing with stuff that doesn't really fit into anybody else's day. So the whole special ops thing is we have opportunities for partnerships with other brands. We're talking directly to people from Google and Bing, for example. We're looking at developing software for other platforms. I'm sticking my fingers in a lot of that and working out day to day where it makes sense for me to dabble. So it's a bit of everything. It's pretty cool.
That does sound pretty cool. And being able to just do a lot of different things while all kind of working for that same goal can be a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, every day is different and it's chaotic. And Yoast as a person is quite erratic as well, but in a good way. So we're always excited about what's coming up next. And it's fairly common just to end up dropping everything that was planned for a day and then going and doing something that's more exciting or shinier until that's done. So it's a bit all over the place, but it's great.
And how did you get involved in public speaking in the first place?
I had a background in theatre, so I spent years growing up acting on stage, behind the stage, etc. But I wasn't very good at it. It was my passion and my hobby when I was growing up, but I just wasn't good enough at any one part of it to make a career out of it. And I wanted something a bit more stable and so on. So I gradually did less and less of that and did more and more stuff online. And then the two kind of came back together fairly gradually. So I got a small speaking gig at like a room above a pub years ago with 10 people. And that went surprisingly well. And off the back of that, somebody in the audience said, hey, I organise this bigger event at this place in a couple of months. Do you want to come and have a stage on that? And it just escalated from there. And it got to the position where every talk I did, somebody said, hey, I organise this bigger event. Do you want to come and do this? And that's just continued. So it's every single one I do just unlocks doors to the next one up, which is bizarre, but pretty cool.
All right, so somebody who travels a lot to do speaking, can you give us like one travel tip?
Oh, stick to Europe. Just stick to Europe. Like I hate long haul more than anything else. I've just got back from Australia this weekend, and 26 hours of travel, I think, was just soul destroying. So I'm obsessed about personal productivity. I have a to-do list with me at all times. I know exactly what I'm working on. I've got 1,000 moving parts, and I want to be blitzing through all the outstanding things. So to have that much downtime, because as much as you kid yourself, you can't really work effectively on a flight or on a long train or whatever. So just the sheer number of hours is pretty grueling. I do use it as an opportunity to write. It's the only thing I can get done. So I will I'll chip away at a blog post or work on some long form content where it's just me and my thoughts. But I struggle to do anything other than that. So yeah, like hopping around Europe's great. Any flight that's less than 3 hours, I can stay in the zone and be motivated. But as soon as you go beyond that, it's just soul destroying.
There you go. Yeah.
Nice practical advice.
With your writing, so I see that I know you have your own personal blog, but what was maybe the last piece that you had published on an external site?
Oh, that's a good question. So I don't do it very often. I write periodically, but when I do, it tends to be like a epic saga because I want to comprehensively cover a topic in as much depth as there is to be covered. I've done some bits for Yoast.com. What was the last thing? I think I wrote, that was it. I had my Digital Marketing is Dead, which went up on the inbound.com, I think, just double checking now. Yeah, which was back as far as March. So that was a while ago. And that was something like 10,000 words or something ridiculous. And that took months to fettle and tweak and perfect. But I'm halfway through the second part of that at the moment. So that should hopefully go up in a little while. Yeah, I really struggle to write short, concise things I want to do. I'm going to pick a topic or something that's bothering me and absolutely destroy it with fire.
Okay, well, great. Thanks for that. So we're going to move on to our would you rather questions.
Excellent.
Are you ready?
Yep, hit me.
Okay. Would you rather be able to detect any lie that you hear or get away with any lie that you tell?
Oh, that's difficult. Am I a moral creature? If I can get away with lying, am I compelled to lie, or do I just know that I can get away with it?
But you can. You know that any lie you tell, everybody will believe you.
I'm going to go with getting away with lies because it's got to be so unpleasant to know about all the polite lies. Like, it's a necessary thing. You've got to go through the day and you look fine in that. Yeah, that's delicious. There are like so many places where it's just easier. What's that say about us? That's not pleasant. But yeah, I would rather get away with lying.
Like you said, just the little ones. It'd be nice for the big ones, but the little ones would probably get to you after a while. Would you rather have no sense of taste or be colorblind?
Oh, colorblind. Food's incredible. I need the taste. Food is such a big part of my life. I'm such a big foodie, so definitely sacrifice some color sense.
Have you seen any of those videos where people who are colorblind their whole life, they have those glasses where they can see color now?
No, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty fat because every single time the person starts to cry. So it's kind of...
Oh, wow. Well, I'm going to have to look that up.
Would you rather get a paper cut every time you touch a piece of paper or... bite your tongue every time you eat?
Can I wear gloves? I would have to. I would have to not touch paper. That's easy. Yeah, I'm going to go with a paper cut and I'm going to live a paper-free life. I'm going to never get any post. I'm going to move everything online. I'm going to eschew printing things, become a hermit. God, biting your tongue is so bad. I can't do that.
Yeah. But, you know, you still eat three times a day. How often do you touch paper anymore?
So, yeah.
Would you rather always have to speak in rhyme or dance everywhere you go?
Oh, speak in rhyme. That would be amazing. I would love that. And if I had to do it, I would have an excuse to do it, so it would be fine. If I did that at the moment, people would think I was weird. But if then I said, oh, I have to do this, obviously, rhyming, of course, that'd be great. It would make all sorts of weird behaviours permissible. And also, dancing is awful. Nobody enjoys dancing, surely.
All right. Would you rather permanently dye your hair neon green or only have one eyebrow?
Ooh. I'll go with the one eyebrow. I'm going to go keep my... So I recently found out one of the benefits of being a redhead is that, or two benefits, is I have a higher pain threshold than average, and I also generate my own vitamin D in low light conditions. So I can work indoors in a basement with no natural light and bred for digital. So I need to be proud of my red hair. So I'll sacrifice an eyebrow.
All right, great. I had heard about the pain threshold thing. That just seems so odd to be put together.
Yeah, doesn't it? Just like bred for bullying. It's great.
All right, well, now that you say it that way, it makes sense. Okay. Would you rather have a popcorn kernel stuck between your teeth or a pebble stuck in your shoe?
Oh, the pebble. The popcorn kernels in the teeth is the worst sensation. Yeah. Absolutely awful. You start to think you're going insane. Definitely the pebble. At least I know it's there and it's real and I'm not driving myself insane.
The pebble's bad, but it's one of those, not only does the popcorn kernel hurt like your gums, you're going to destroy your tongue trying to move it out of there.
Yeah. So, that's a bad hour.
Yeah. All right. And our final would you rather question, would you rather be the worst player on the best team or the best player on the worst team?
Ooh, what's this say about career? I would rather be the worst player on the best team. Assuming that doesn't get me instantly kicked off the team, then I've got something to aspire to and I can improve. Yeah, nothing worse than being at the top of the game but limited. Like that, and so much of my learning and progress and the stuff I've achieved has been because I've moved from small ponds to bigger ponds and always found smarter people and surrounded myself with them. So yeah, definitely the idiot in the smart group.
Now you describe yourself all around here as an amateur futurologist. What exactly does that mean? What do you do with that?
I think it means not a lot. It's it turned into one of those buzzwords like growth hacker and founder. But I found myself doing a lot more consulting when I was working for LinkedX and then later Distilled. And one of the things that kept coming up was working with a big brand like a Samsung or a Lego, and you've got to tell them what their SEO and content and brand strategy should be. And that's not a small decision. And the direction they take is going to give them momentum and set them on a course which is going to last 3, 5, 10 years. So you've got to get that right. And increasingly, the landscape they're going to be playing in is shaped by people like Google, like Amazon, like Uber. So if you're going to give them a robust strategy, which you can believe in, you've got to understand what those guys are doing. Because if Amazon buys Uber, for example, the whole world changes. And all the foundations that you've built your assumptions on and all the understanding of the market you have is suddenly void. And you've just pivoted Samsung into disaster. So I spent a huge amount of time trying to work out what the future looked like. And that was based on what are Amazon doing, what are Google doing, what are Apple doing, what's Tesla doing. And if you assume that all of those players are trying to work out what the other ones are doing because they all want to win, they all have a plan to dominate their markets in the next 5 years or so, assume that there's a big game of chess going on and they're all trying to outpace each other. And then work back from what are things like the rise of autonomous vehicles do, what's the rise of drone technology do, and all these moving parts. And I wove it into essentially a big narrative, which I toured around the world as a talk for a while, which was a lot of fun. But I tried to map out What does the digital landscape look like as a result of all these moving parts, and therefore what should you do? And it's pretty dystopian, but I've since tried to keep that up to date, and I'm looking a lot more into what does the world we play in look like 5 or 10 years from now, just so that you can make decisions which you've got a reasonable amount of faith in. Otherwise, anything that you set in stone today is going to go out the window tomorrow, because stuff is just changing ridiculously quickly. So yeah, essentially just trying to stitch together all of the moving parts and weave some kind of vision from it.
Okay. Now with something like this, where you're really trying to focus on more than one thing at a time, and has there been something that, you know, as you sat back and really looked at the bigger picture, has there been anything that's really surprised you? Has there been anything that has just kind of jumped out at you, like, had you not been looking at 1, 2, and 3, you would have never noticed 4, maybe 5, something like that?
Interesting. I think that one of the big revelations was that when it's at a very high quality, retail is the same as entertainment. And high-end high streets have known this for a long time. It's why you get champagne at posh shops, etc. But I think one of the things I see unfolding is Amazon in particular, but also some of the other players, merging those two concepts to the point where spending money becomes fun. And this is how they grow. It's why Amazon, for example, are investing so much in Amazon Prime Video. It's why Prime's such a big deal. Why the intelligent bookstore stuff they're doing, where they stock shelves based on the most highly rated books, a whole bunch of other pieces. It's why they're trying to make that feel more and more seamless, because they understand that when you remove all of that friction and you make it truly joyous to purchase, people will proactively choose to spend money, not just because they need the thing, but because the experience of spending it is entertainment in its own right. And that was a huge light bulb moment, because our whole world at the moment feels a little bit transactional, because nobody is equipped to deliver that quality of experience. Whereas you fast forward a bit, suddenly we live in a world where the act of buying something is such a good experience in its own right, that that's a separate product from the thing that you're buying. That was pretty interesting. I think when you start to analyze that, you can see a lot of the big brands are starting to work towards delivering that kind of experience. It's what Apple have always done, albeit a little accidentally, with the Apple Store experience, but more and more people are trying to emulate that.
Okay, and then so how do you change it, or maybe focus that on with a company, like you mentioned you worked for Lego. Now, this is a brand that probably, other than maybe some additional colors or, you know, kits or whatnot, but, you know, Lego is essentially, I mean, that I'm sure it hasn't changed since I was a kid significantly. You know, you have blocks, they go together, you can build stuff. So how do you apply this, you know, futurology to a company that is working on kind of an old school model?
So I should caveat this and say that I didn't work actively with Lego. I did some consultancy as part of a pitch for them, but it turned into a big project on its own right. But I think actually Lego, from my experience with them, are one of the most sophisticated brands I've encountered when it comes to certainly SEO, if not broader digital marketing. So, and I think they're a really good example of where this fits. So their success criteria for all their activity isn't did we rank first in Google? It isn't did we get the most clicks and visits? It isn't even did we generate the most sales and revenue? It's of all the people who are looking to interact with their brand, what percentage of those got a good experience? And that might well mean that somebody searches for a Lego product and the first 3 results in Google are YouTube videos of some kid playing happily with that Lego toy. And if that's what they click and that's what they see, that's a successful brand interaction. So they've abstracted away from all of this clicks and sales nonsense, and really they're focusing on how do we optimize for brand, because they understand that that drives preference and attention and recall, and they sell a huge amount more product in the physical retail stores. Now, I think when you look at that kind of thinking, and then you contrast that with what's unfolding in the digital landscape, where we've got the rise of voice search, where we've got the rise of personal assistants, where increasingly people are outsourcing or deferring their decision-making processes to platforms and mobile phones and Alexas, that kind of brand marketing is going to be what works. Whereas conventional models of how do we drag people to our website and convince them to click on the thing and add it to the cart and go through the checkout is going to be clunkier and clunky in comparison. So even though they are an old school company, I think their way of thinking is going to put them in a much better position than a lot of the, even the smart, savvy digital marketers who are still playing in a world based on how do we attract lots of clicks to our website. They understand that what they're trying to win on is preference and consumer experience, and that happens out there externally from their website. So I think they're a really interesting example. I think there are other brands who are thinking like this. I know that bits of Microsoft and bits of Samsung are as well, for example, and some others. But that's definitely definitely what the future of it all looks like.
And so now for yourself, I saw something where on your blog where you talked about finally giving in and getting a Kindle.
Yeah.
And so that's something I actually haven't done. I know some people do, but I remember going through the thing of actually finally getting an iPod because I loved going to the record store. I loved buying CDs and doing this stuff. And then finally going digital, it was the whole, oh, I don't have to pick out 10 CDs before I go to work.
Yep.
I have everything I've ever owned ever right here, you know. So that was kind of that was a step for me. So how do you feel now about, because I think the Kindle story was from a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it's a while back.
Do you miss the tactile sensations you mentioned with the book? Are you still happy with this decision because you can carry everything you have and not have to worry about it on these long 26 in
Australia? So I miss the idea of the tactile stuff and the smell of paper and the cracking the spine, etc. But I now can't read paper books. Like my Kindle died recently and I had to get it replaced. But the physicality of holding a book is so awkward. And if you're at the beginning, then it's heavy on the wrong side. And if you're towards the end, it's all floppy and the front, like everything about it is awful. It's like so physically hard. And then the words bend in towards the middle when you're like, how do I read this on a slope? All of it's terrible. Like it's so, so good to have a nice flat lit screen. It's incredible. I can't go back. So I still love the idea of paper books, and I think there's a romanticism about them, but completely impractical. Like my Kindle is never more than a few feet away from me. I always have a dozen or so books lined up on there that I want to read next that I know I'm interested in that I've already pre-vetted. The caveat, however, is browsing is hard, so I still go into the bookshop. And I wander around and I use their heating and oxygen and electricity. And I use them as a library to pick out what I want next. And then I go away and I buy it from Amazon. And they've failed to do anything about that yet, which is a bit scary. And in fact, going back to the Futurology stuff, I wonder if bookshops are where the first stages of this revolution happen, where if someone like, and I've talked about this a few times, I wonder if somebody like Waterstones, who are the preeminent bookstore in the UK and elsewhere, if they just embraced that and they tried to make it more like an Apple store, if they recognized me when I walked in, they got me to give them their email address so it hooks up to my account, so it now ties into something like the Goodreads API, which hooks into my Amazon purchase history, etc., etc. They know what I like. They know what I want. They can say, oh, have you checked out this sequel to this thing you like? They can deliver personalized service in a way that makes it feel more like an experience. Give me a coffee. I'm going to browse some options. They can monetize on that in a way that they're just failing to at the moment. So I think there's an opportunity there.
And I really feel like record stores kind of went through that in the late 90s.
Oh, well. God, yeah.
So, I don't miss paying a lot of money for something that only has one good song on it. I do miss that going into the shop and flipping through the stacks and finding something you maybe had never heard of and talking to the people behind.
Yeah, it's so great.
I miss all that. And I buy stuff that I know that I like on vinyl. And that's been kind of my compromise with that because I still have a bunch of CDs which I should have gotten rid of before I moved to Poland, but this never quite did. So I make a point to actually put them on Sundays I play, but either on weekends or like when the kids go to bed, I'll pull out a couple of beers and some vinyl records kind of thing.
Oh, nice.
Because I do enjoy that kind of like you said, the tactile, but I have my iPod with me. I still have the old kind of classic iPod that I have with me basically at all times. I just feel like a lot of people miss the boat on some of those things and finding a way to make that work. And time moves on, I guess.
It does. I still buy CDs from bands I like or kind of Kickstarter music stuff, but they're awkward. I've got Spotify. I've got a phone that's full of music. It's the tactile thing's nice, but it definitely feels like every year that goes past physical media feels weirder and weirder.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where, you know, because we just have so many different places you can listen to music now. And now it could be like, you mentioned a band I've never heard of. I can jump on YouTube and at least listen to a couple of tracks and see if it's something that would appeal to me, kind of thing. So there's some, there's some great, great stuff about it as well. So we're going to move on now to our third and final round, which is the Elephate Lightning Round.
Cool.
Now, if you would like to expand on anything, you can. If not, we're just going to go right on to the next one. Okay?
Okay.
All right. First one, Zombie Apocalypse or Robot Uprising?
Zombie Apocalypse. I've prepared. I'm ready. I have a friend who is a massive hobbyist prepper, and he's corrected all of my misguided opinions on what I should do. Like, he has a very precise order of do you secure weapons and then food and then transport, or communications and water, then travel, etc. He's got it all mapped out. I've learned from the best. He knows exactly the right amount of soup to store at any given time. He knows where to go. So I've got a list from him. So if it happens, I can fire up my email and dig that out, and I'll be ready. So definitely zombies.
Ready to go. All right, good. I'll keep that in mind. Tom Collins or a gin martini?
Oh, gin martini. And every time.
1984 or Brave New World?
84, but it was woefully not scary enough. Like, we've already surpassed it. 84 was lame in comparison to what we're now experiencing.
Yeah, I love 1984, and I reread that a couple of years ago. I used to teach English at an international high school here in Poland. I taught 1984 for a year.
Oh, nice.
And just kind of had forgotten how much I really loved that book. But the thought of it at the end, where they put all that time and all those resources into getting like two people, I thought was kind of.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was like, hey, what's their budget there?
Yeah, per person. Yep.
Yeah, it was crazy just how much they went into for those two people. I'm sure there was more people than that. You've described yourself as a mad scientist on a few things. So Dr. Frankenstein or Dr. Moreau?
Oh, Frankenstein. Frankenstein. Just the glory of creation. The new film was awful, though. Actually, I might have to change my mind. That was really bad. So that might have ruined it for me. I haven't read it in years. I should go back and revisit it and do a comparison. We'll regroup and I'll let you know.
Okay. Riverside or Anubis?
Ooh, Riverside.
Polish band.
Okay. Yeah, Riverside I'm going to go and see, I think, in October? They're in the UK at some point, I think. Yeah, I enjoy Riverside. Anubis less so, bit flashy, but Riverside are excellent.
Iron Maiden or Judas Priest?
Judas Priest, who I saw relatively recently by chance in Germany, I think. I was at a conference and I had a spare day, and they were on tour in the city. So, yep, done. Excellent.
Oh, how was that?
Not bad. They aged a bit, but it was all right. I'm quite good friends with the guy who was almost the lead singer for Iron Maiden. He auditioned and was the number two. But he's one of my favorite musicians and is a singer-songwriter type, does a lot of kind of folky, rocky metal stuff, so tours around a lot with the son of Rick Wakeman, which is an interesting intersect. Check him out. It's Damien Wilson. Really good.
Ah, okay. I will do that. In the Court of the Crimson King or Selling England by the Pound?
Oh, Crimson King, just a beautiful refrain. That moment where it just comes together is glorious.
All right. Cold War Bunker or York City Walls?
A hybrid. York has a Cold War bunker behind the walls.
Terrier or pudding?
As in the dog?
Yeah, so Yorkshire Terrier or Yorkshire pudding?
Oh, challenging. To eat? Or to pet.
Well, you know,
Yorkshire pudding.
Okay, now I know you've said to do a lot of public speaking here, so dry mouth or slides not working properly? Which one's worse?
Slides not working, because at least I can gabble around it and flap and flail. I had a deck a while ago where it was a room above a pub jobby as a favour for a friend, and the clicky thing to advance the slides only worked when it was right up at ceiling level and was pointing at the receiver, which had to be balanced on top of the bar. So I had somebody stood next to me, and every time I clapped, they had to stand on a table, press the button and point it at a guy who was stood on the bar holding the thing. It was incredible. The whole thing just became ludicrous. That was fun.
That sounds like it would have almost been a good time despite itself. Yeah. Okay. And as an English person, our final question goes to you. Lukewarm tea or plain toast?
Oh, neither of those are good. Oh, do I have to? Can I not just leave it? The tea. The tea. At least I can. It'll be over quickly. The toast is going to be a grueling experience.
All right, there you have it, everybody. Lukewarm tea for our friend.
Amazing. That's what I want on my T-shirt.
Okay, so that's the end of the that round there. So, which basically brings us just about to the end of our podcast here. Do you have any final thoughts? Anything that you would like to promote?
Anything I'd like to promote? Yes, everybody should come to YoastCon, which is our big conference thing in February, featuring such people as myself and Rand Fishkin and Geraldine DeRuiter and a bunch of other cool people. It's going to be a super fun conference in Nijmegen, I think, in the Netherlands.
Okay, so thank you. Thank you so very much for joining us. We really appreciate it. So everybody should check out what you got going on there. You have your own web page, right? JonoAlderson.com or something?
Yep, at Jono Alderson on Twitter, JonoAlderson.com, Yoast.com/Jono, something, some, all of it. Easy enough to Google.
All right, yeah. So not a whole lot of people with the same name. So, all right.
No, there were two others, and I've defeated them both, I think. I feel really guilty about that. There's a landscape gardener and a professor who just can't be found on Google anymore. And I do stay up sometimes at night wondering whether I'm a bad person for having destroyed their businesses.
Yeah, okay. So we'll send that guy a bottle of gin or something, so we'll figure
it out. Solved.
All right, so thank you very much.
Nice one. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to Elephate in the Room, hosted by Derek Carreview, produced by Christian A. Dumay, music by Giant Monsters on the Horizon. This podcast is a part of Elephate, the 2018 European Search Awards winner for Best Small SEO Agency. Follow Elephate on Twitter at Elephate SEO and on Facebook at Elephate. Thanks for joining us and see you next time.